All right, he's ready for you. Yeah.
Okay, then let's start. Last session for today. Thanks for attending. This is Seth Juarez, right?
Yeah.
We practiced that. And it's a session about machine learning from a developer's perspective. Make sure after the session that you provide us with feedback, which is valuable for us, and as well for the entire event. You can go to the Ribbon info and then do that as well. With that, I want to hand over to you.
Thank you. All right, my name is Seth. I work for Channel 9. But most people don't know, I actually know how to write code. It's not very good, but I still write code. And so the other thing that's cool is that this is streaming live, and so in the United States right now, it is, where I live, it's 7:45 in the morning. On the East Coast, it's 10:45. In London, it's 3:45. Good morning, yes. If you have any questions, I'm actually watching the questions here, if you have them from Channel 9, because I have special access to when, you know, we get questions, and so please ask them. The other thing I'll ask you is that what's going to happen after my dumb jokes at the beginning is I'm going to go super fast, right? Because I'm trying to cover roughly what's equivalent of 3 to 4 weeks of what you would do in grad school for machine learning. So I'm going to go really fast, okay? And so if I'm going too fast or you want me to slow down, just take your shoe off and throw it at me or something like that. And that way, if you're at home, you can take your shoe off and throw it at the screen. I will not feel it, but I will still, there will be a disturbance in the force. It's very clear to me. Okay, so today we're going to talk about machine learning for developers. And the thing about devs is that when we hear about machine learning, we think of like magic unicorns and rainbows. We also think about some other horrible things that have happened with machine learning over the years that are scary and that have literally changed everything we thought about computers because it was horrible stuff. And so what I want to do is I want to make sure, because look, as developers, we don't like magical because magical means that we're going to have to maintain this in a magical way, right? And we have to wear a tinfoil hat to make sure that it works the next build, and we don't want that. So today what I'm going to do is I'm going to cut the unicorn in half, and we're going to look inside of its guts. I don't think that analogy works. So we're going to open the black box, and we're going to look inside and see what it is that machine learning is doing. We're going to look at 3 machine learning algorithms, maybe 4, depending on the time, and I'm going to show you how they actually work. And then I'm going to show you that you don't have to know how they work, but it's good to know, and I'm going to show you how to do it in Azure ML and why Azure ML is very powerful, okay? Because as developers, I hate it when some marketing guy gets up and they say, it's magic. Like, immediately I'm just like, oh, dude, shut up. It's not magic because I'm supporting magic at work, and it's not very magical for me, okay? And so that's what we're going to talk about today. So here's the agenda. Already did the dumb stuff. I'm going to talk about data science and what it means. And then I'm going to get into the part of machine learning that's prediction. There's other parts that I'll give you a sort of a summary about, but I'm just going to dive into one thing, and that's prediction. And then I'll tell you the process that a data scientist goes through, right? The funnest part actually is the smallest part that you do. And then I'll get into some of the models. I'll do 3 for sure, 4 maybe, and then I'll get into Azure ML, okay? If you have any questions, please stop me, and every once in a while you're going to see me alt-tab over to this thing right here that's black right now because that has my questions on it that come from the audience. And then my boss will also tell me how much time I have, or you'll tell me, okay? So let's start with this notion of science. So when someone says, I have this thing down to a science, people think, oh, that means it's very rigid. But that's not what science is. Science is, I don't know. I'm going to guess, I'm going to check, and I'm going to do it again until I get the right answer, right? Science is this fuzzy thing of I have no idea what I'm doing, but I think based upon my experience that this is going to happen if I do this, right? That's science. So the thing about this is the majority of times this is not going to work because it's not magic, right? And so when you look at this stuff and you try it out and you go home and it doesn't work, remember that I told you that it doesn't work the first time. But with experience and with tuning and with getting the right data, this stuff is going to start to work. You're going to have more ideas. And the amount of ideas that you're going to have are going to start to be more focused. And then at the end, you're going to have something that works. When people use machine learning in a way that works, they never tell you how they do it. Because the secret sauce is pretty much picking a certain amount of things and then putting it into the right algorithm with the right parameters, and that's it. So if they were to tell you how to do it, they would replicate you could replicate these things very quickly. Okay? And so that's the main thing. It's a lot of guess and check. That's what machine learning, that's what data science is all about. The thing about machine learning that's important is I'll tell you an example. So how many of you work for a bank? Sorry, man. Like, have you seen some of the databases these people deal with? They're ugly, right? The data's in there is just complete trash. So imagine one day your boss, she comes in and she's like, hey, what's your name?
Sven.
It's a very German name, maybe? I don't know. So Sven, your boss comes in and says, hey, Sven, and pretend that you're the guy that has to write this. Hey, look, Sven, our boss wants us to start putting, just on his checks, a picture of his cat on his check, but you need to write an algorithm that will, when they put the check into the machine, will turn the check right side up, if it's upside down, right? But just, and this, I hate this, right? Because every sales dude comes in, it's like, it's just this one thing, right? It's just this one button that launches a rocket into outer space, but it's just a button that, just one button you have to write, right? Everyone has this thing. So they come to Sven, and Sven's like, yeah, just this one thing, okay. So he figures out that let's just say it was a really super easy check that had a black stripe at the top. Could you write an algorithm to flip it right side up? Yeah, you look at the pixels, and if it's black on the bottom, you flip it. Okay, so then they come in the next day, and then he's like, okay, well, now he's going to put the picture of the cat on it. Would that be a little bit harder? Of course it would. But if it's the same cat and the same picture, is it really that hard? No, so you have black stripe at the bottom, flip, else if, cat upside down, I don't know what language this is, cat upside down, flip, right? And we're good, pretty simple. And then the sales guy comes in and says, hey, Sven, so this picture check thing is super cool. We want to roll it out to all of our customers, and they can put any picture they want. Now we have a problem. Right? Have you ever written code where you have a lot of if statements, right? If X is less than, let's put 0.5 because it seems to work, right? Then do this. Like the kind of code where you go home and you feel like you got to take a shower afterwards because you just feel dirty, right? I should not have written that, but I checked it in. Someone may look at it, but you hit it in region comments, which you shouldn't be using, right? So when you do that kind of stuff, it's like, it feels like, there's got to be a better way, right? Because as programmers, what we do is we get a problem and we find a set of steps that will solve that problem. That's what we do. Every single thing, right? And the funniest jokes are like, hey, if you go to the store and there's a gallon of milk, bring home 4 bananas, right? Then the programmer will bring home 4 bananas and where's the milk, right? You see what I'm saying? We think of a series of steps. The thing about machine learning is we're kind of letting go of that. Instead of coming up with a series of steps, we give the computer the right thing, and then it will figure out what the steps are. That's the difference. So that's what all this says, but you can read, right? I just used a goofy story. So the idea is instead of finding a series of steps that you need to solve a machine learning problem, or to solve a problem, instead you give the computer a set of data and let it figure out what to do. You give it the right thing, and then it figures out what to do. Does that make sense? The thing about sciencing, though, is that it always starts with a sharp question. Because Sven works for a bank, they're going to come to him and say, hey, you know, we need to use machine learning. So will you get on that? Sven's like, yeah, sure. Got all weekend to think about it. Right? You see what I'm saying? There has to be a real question. For what? Right? Every problem we encounter in computing is there is a question. Right? Can I recommend something to my customers after they put something in their basket? That's a real question. Can we predict whether or not someone is going to default on a loan given all the past loans that we put out? That's a real question that a banker will ask, right? You have to ask a real question first. Always, 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 always start with a real question. I mean, if someone came to you and said, let's build some software, you'd be like, sure. Done. Right? You see what I'm saying? You need to have a real question. And once you have that real question, then you can start to make decisions about whether or not machine learning is a good place to answer. So there's only five that machine learning can answer. Only five, believe it or not. The first one is how much, how many, right? The second one is which class does this belong to? That's the one we're going to talk about today. The third is are there different groups and which group does it belong to? The third is it weird? And the last one is which option should I choose? And those questions are the same as this, right? The first one is regression. The second one is classification. Third is clustering. Then anomaly detection and recommend. Those are the only things machine learning can do. And if you're taking a picture of this, that's wonderful, but they're recording it too. So, and I'll give you the slides too. Sven and I are going to have a chat afterwards too about this stuff. So you have to have a question. And if it fits, I'm going to use my laser. If it fits some of these, then it's a machine learning problem that you can use, right? If you have data, then you can solve this problem. Okay, so this is supervised learning, and this is called unsupervised learning. Someone needs to tell me how much time I have, because I'm going to forget. I've already gone through 10 minutes. All right, so here's some neat applications. This is actually a supervised learning problem, right? Because the question is, in a series of depth points that the Kinect gets, is this point a shoulder? Is this point a, you see what I'm saying? It's a classification problem. And what they did is they had people dance around in front of these things a lot, and then they fed it to the machine with where the right things are. They also generated fake people of various sundry different sizes, and they used those fake people to do this. They used decision trios, decision forest algorithm, right? And it's a simple algorithm. I could show you like the foundations of it in like 10 minutes if we have that much time. So this is an example of a supervised learning problem where you're trying to classify body parts. This is an example of, oh, that looks weird. This is an example of my Netflix queue. I don't have any kids. It's just me. Right? Notice this is an example of recommendation. Based upon what I have, you know, what do you recommend? Sorry for the little squiggles there that are happening. There's other neat applications that you can find. There's tons of them. My particular area of research at first was machine translation, but that's super hard. And if you get mad at the translate thing, I'm going to get mad at you. You don't even know how to talk in your own language. I don't even know how to talk in my language. And somehow the computer is supposed to figure out how to talk between us. Right. Okay. Just saying. All right. So today we're gonna look at supervised learning only. And I'm only going to focus on classification, which is the second one. So if you have a question about how much or how many, that's regression. We're not going to talk about that today. If you have a question about which class does this belong to, that's what we're going to talk about specifically today. The other ones, there's some cool algorithms in there too, but these are the ones I'm going to focus on so you can get a sense of how dumb these things are. There are not. So when someone says, is AI going to kill us? Well, it might, you know, if you write it wrong. Right? You know what I'm saying? Or it might if you give it bad data. Right? You've seen machine learning algorithms do stupid things because they have bad data. And so we're going to focus on that one in particular. Here is how I like to think about it. So this here is binary classification. When you have to decide whether yes or no. The example of whether someone will default on a loan is an example of yes or no problem, given the data from the past. The second one is called multi-class classification, where you have to decide between a finite set of things. And then the last one is called regression, where you have to decide between an infinite set of things. We're not going to cover the last one because, I don't know, it's boring, right? Because there's algorithms that fit points. You've all done these, right? Like, Germans invented all this kind of stuff, right? When I talk about eigenvalue decomposition, that's a German word, right? So good on you guys. So thank you for that. So we're only going to look at binary classification today because what I'm going to tell you, I'm going to ask you, if I have one of these, let's pretend I have one of these that always works. How can I make one of these with one of those? This question is for you. I used to teach school, and so awkward silence is really only awkward for you. I don't care. So I have one of those binary classifiers. How could I take binary classifiers and make a multi-class classifier? Yes, sir. Okay, you make a decision tree out of the classifiers, okay. How about this? How about I say, hey, I want you to decide if it's A or not, B or not, C or not, D D or not, F or not, and whichever one has the highest score, that one wins. Right? That's called a one versus all multi-class classifier. The other one is called an all versus all classifier. We say, is it A or B, A or C, A or D, A or F, B or C? You see what I'm saying? And so notice that, so I'm only going to talk about this one now, because we know if we have one of these, we can make one of these. You see what I'm doing? I'm trying to back off because we only have 50 minutes now. Okay, so here is the process that you go through. The first one that we already talked about is you have a question. If you do not start with a question, just humor them for the half-hour meeting that you have to be in there for. Oh, yeah, we should use machine learning. Great idea. And then back away, right? But if you have the real question that fits into one of those five categories, then this is where the real process begins. I'm going to talk about this process twice, once fast and once slow, okay? So the first thing you have to do is you have to identify the data that you have to answer this question. That's the first one. The second one is you have to actually explore the data, and you actually have to do stuff with the data. You have to shape it. You have to change it. And we'll get into why in a second. Once you have that, then you get into what's called the modeling process. And once you have the model that you want, then you predict. Simple, right? You start with a question. Then you get into identification of what data you have, because you might have a question that's completely awesome, but you may have no data for that. So that's where it stops. That's where science stops, right? You have a sharp question, and then you say, I wonder what the data can say. Well, we have none. Okay, we're done. Time to go home, right? And then once you do have the data, you have to figure out, is the data good? Will it answer my question? Is there a missing value? Instead, I'll get all through that. I'll go through that again. So here's some examples. Let's pretend you work at a tennis shop. You work at a tennis shop, and you want to be able to staff it appropriately given the particular weather conditions, right? So let's pretend this is your table of data, right? And you have a couple of things. The label is what you want to predict, right? So that's going to be play, no play, whatever. The features are the pieces of data that you're going to use to make the prediction, right? And the values is X. So the machine learning problem is, given a set of X, right, which is this stuff over here, can I predict Y? So you're making it effectively a function, right, that takes a big X and a vector Y, a big matrix X and a big vector Y, and you're trying to figure out what a model is such that given a new little X, which is another example, it'll spit out the right Y. That's machine learning. That's the prediction problem, okay? But the reality of the matter is that if you work somewhere, this is what your data looks like, right? Sven at the bank, for some reason, Jim in the back is always putting the age in the name field, and he just won't stop. Just this one guy, right? If you're looking at dirty jobs, you should look at the DBA in a bank, because they're seriously dirty, garbage data. So, for example, what does it mean it was kind of windy? What do you mean, turtle cloud? Who put this in here? Right, but this is actually what data looks like. Right, and so you have to do some of the work. We call that work yak shaving in programming parlance. Right? This is the yak shaving of data science, and this is where you're going to spend the majority of your time. This is the ugly stuff. So if you have a data scientist at work, they have the nice corner office, they show up like at 11, right, and they go into their office and they sit in there forever, they're literally pulling their hair out, figuring out why the heck people put this stuff in there and how they're going to compensate for that. Okay? Once you do that, then there's some other exploration or cleansing that has to happen, because the reality of fact is machine learning really can only deal with numerics or numbers, because the algorithms are all numerical, right? And so you have to find a way to convert to that. Luckily, there's some things that already do that, like Azure ML does that. There's some other open source libraries that do that for you. So now what we're going to do is, from here on out, we're going to pretend that all of your features X are just numbers. Is that okay? Okay, good. So there you go, and then you got to convert it over to some numbers. Once you do that, you create a model. Oh, I should have not shown you this. So what would you have done? What algorithm, what would you do if you were to get this value right here, sunny, low, and no, would you bring someone extra to open the tennis court up? Play, why?
Temperature play, only if windy.
So genius guy over here, what he did is he literally went and made an algorithm based upon the data, which is amazing.
And I'm not working on a bank.
Yeah, and he doesn't work at a bank. So like what he did is what we would all do, right? We would take this and we'd see, okay, looks like when it was sunny, they played once, but looks like the temperature had something to do with the sunny. And we would do this ourselves, right? But here's the problem. Now you have a million rows and 10,000 columns. He might be able to do it, but not me, right? I'm not smart enough to do that stuff. And so that's where machine learning has a problem. So here's a model that it built. Here's one that it built using decision tree. Notice that it says if the outlook is sunny and the temperature is low, you should not pay. Or high, you should not play. See that? It's pretty simple. But now remember, there's a lot of data as well. And so that's the model. What you do at the end is you make a prediction. You take this thing, you get a new sample, which was on the bottom, and this means that we should indeed play. Okay? Now, that's pretty much the classification problem. Any questions about that? Okay? Do they work? Well, we don't know, right? I mean, it depends. You have to make the model. And so the idea of do they work, well, what does that mean to you? How do you test these things? So this is how you test them, right? You take your data, and hopefully you have a lot of it, and I made this number up. I usually use 80. In the Azure ML suite, it uses 75 or 70%. So you take 80% of your rows, and you make a model out of that, and then you take the rest, the 20%, and you test it against your model and see how well it does. So what is well? What does it mean to do well? Well, most of us usually think, well, how many did it get wrong out of how many were in there, right? That's an accuracy number, but that's not enough. For example, let's just say you have a machine that's going to predict whether or not someone has cancer, given particular data. What do you want to optimize for? Do you want it to guess that they do have cancer if it's not sure? Yes, right? Because if there's a small percent likelihood that they may have cancer, then you want your machine learning algorithm to be better at guessing what is true, right? And that's why you have extra numbers, right? Those are called recall and precision, right? This one, I'll leave it to you because I always get these backwards for survey. This is how good it is at guessing truth, right? And this is how good it is when it guesses true. You see that? Or maybe I got it backwards, one or the other. But one recall is the one you want to optimize for when you're actually doing these particular kinds of things. And so there's different numbers. And it turns out if you go to Wikipedia, there's a name for this, there's a name for this, there's a name for these two, a name for these two. So there's tons of ways of measuring how well these things are doing. But that's called a confusion matrix because those two words make us seem the smartest. Right? Matrix and confusion together make us feel really smart, although it is kind of confusing. All right, so what we're going to do is we're going to make one ourselves. We're going to try to figure out how to make a classifier, and we're going to use a linear one. So far, there's no questions, which is good. So I'm going to open a spreadsheet because that's where all the scientific work happens in the world, is in a spreadsheet, and you laugh. All of you have written code from a spreadsheet. Let's not lie. Okay. Everyone's putting their head down in shame. Me too. Okay, so what kind of problem is this? Binary classification, right? The feature, how many features do we have? Rhymes with one. Yes, thank you, Sven, for shouting that out for everyone. So what would you do if this was your machine learning problem? You have this feature that's a number, and you have to predict whether that number belongs to the true or the false class. What would you do? What's that? Look at it. You said make a table?
People.
Pivot table. Okay, pivot table. I understood that now. What else would anyone else do? Like, I had one dude one time. It was like, well, I would take the mean, and then I would look at the variance and blah, blah, blah. I was like, that's really cool, dude. Let's do this. So let's go to data, and let's sort this. Oh, shoot. I have to pick stuff first. So data, and then I'm going to sort this. Expand, so hold on. I think I have to pick all of it. I don't even know how to use Excel anymore. How embarrassing. I'm glad no one's watching. Oh, wait. So data, and then I'm going to sort this by feature from smallest to largest. Are you seeing a pattern here? Yeah. Return x less than 6, right? That's your machine learning algorithm. That's how simple that is. Right? Notice that if you want to decide between two things, you need to be able to separate them. And if we only have a string of numbers, that's a line, right? Numbers on a line. And the way you separate the line is you cut it in half, or you cut it wherever there's sort of this delimiter. So what does that look like in two space? Let me show you. So when you're trying to remember, what we've decided is we've decided that we can convert these all to numbers, right? So here is another one. So I'm going to generate some data. How would you separate this? Remember, when you're using one dimension, you separate with a point. When you're in two dimensions, you separate with a line. Right? What if you're in three dimensions? You separate with a plane. What about in four dimensions? A hyperplane, right? What about five? After that, they gave up. It's all hyperplanes after that, all the way down, right? And so that's one way to do it. So here is an interesting algorithm that you're really going to like, and I'll show you how it works. And it's the basis for the coolest machine algorithms that we actually use. So we'll start with some maths. In Europe, you have maths because you have mysterious maths that we don't have in the US because we just call it math. So you have extra secret math that I'm not aware of. So I'm really excited to learn what that is. But you remember the dot product, right? It's this dumb vector maths thing, right? Turns out that there's an interesting relationship with a dot product of two vectors, right? Right? It turns out that the angle between them, right? There's a relationship between the angle between them and the dot product. And there's also a really fun thing that happens, that when the two vectors are perpendicular to each other, not perpendicular, orthogonal to each other. What's that word? Help me, we're in Germany. Right, yeah, when it's like this, right? Like a right angle. Yeah, yes. Yeah, he knows. He's like, yeah, this is math. Das ist fantastisch, ja, unglaublich. Jawohl, right? And so when it's perpendicular, right, the cosine of that angle is zero. So when the dot product of two vectors is zero, that means that they're a right angle between them, right? And what happens is with one vector, right, every vector that is perpendicular to it forms a line. And so now and the other thing that's interesting is when you take the dot product of two vectors, if the answer is negative, it's on one side. If the answer is positive, it's on the other side. If it's zero, it's on the border. So we found a way to find the border. And let me show you what this guy did. I think it was in, what year was this? Okay, hold on. 1957, Frank Rosenblatt made this algorithm, right? He just said, go through all the points. If you make a mistake, change the vector over. And once it's changed, then we'll keep updating until we get something. I added something to this algorithm such that it will remember where it stayed still the longest and sort of factor that back in. So remember, like the idea is that when you're doing this, we've already converted your data to numbers. And now they live on some plane somewhere, and now you're trying to find the best line that separates them, right? And so that's the line. It's pretty good, right? It's going to make mistakes. It's okay, right? The one thing that you need to know is if these things are getting 100% accuracy, you should be like, something's really wrong. If it's getting 50% accuracy, you should just return rand.next less than 0.5. Right, same thing. Sorry, that was C-sharp stuff. Random. Okay. All right, so here's a question I have for you. What if it looks like that? What line separates those points? Circle. That must be the secret math that we have in Europe. Because in America, line and circle are not the same, generally speaking. I mean, you know what I'm saying? But here's the thing, right? We have two options. What do we do with this? We have two options. Two options, right? And these are the two other algorithms I'm going to show you. We can either change the points or we can change the function, right? Because remember, the function we did is we found this W vector, this vector that what it did is it separated everything perfectly, which is we'll call it W for reasons that will be shown. So what we're going to do is we're going to change the points, starting with that first. We'll change the points first. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to open me up some Visual Studio Code, because who doesn't love some Visual Studio Code? And I'm going to open a file here, and I'm going to call this sample. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this, and watch this cool thing. Hold on. Give it a second. There you go. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to highlight this. I'm going to run cell. Did you know you could do this with Python and in Visual Studio? I just figured this out last week. Okay, it's not working right now, but there it is. It just took a little while. So this is similar, right? Except the other one looked nicer because they were drawn normally at random, which makes a nice ball. These were drawn uniformly at random, which makes a kind of a square, right? So this is similar, but uniformly at random. Let me show you how I made the points so you can see. You can see I made a random set of 300 points, right? I moved them over, right? Because when you do a random number, it's between 0 and 1. I moved them all over 0.5, so they're in the middle. And then I blew them up by multiplying, right? So they spaced out. Those are the red ones. You see that right there? I'm drawing the red ones. The next one is the same thing, except I made 100. I moved them over 0.5 and then put them all in the middle. So that's what I did. So now let's do this. We're going to add another dimension because science. Let's do whatever we want, right? If it works, great. So what we're going to do is we're going to take x and we're going to map it to x squared. We're going to take y and map it to y squared. And then we're going to map z to be x times y. Do you see how I did that right here? The V stack, right? I'm taking the first column, squaring each of the numbers, the second column, squaring those numbers, and then I'm multiplying x times y. That's the Python way of doing that. And then I added square root of 2 because you have to do that for, and you'll see why. And then I am literally just going to run this after that, and I'm going to run that right now in the Python terminal I got to start it over from the beginning, because it got angry with me. So I'm going to run selection in Python terminal. So there's the first one. Here is the second one. Do you see what this did? What? Is there a line that separates this? Yeah, remember I made you go through that dumb exercise of telling me what happens in three dimensions on purpose. Is there a plane that separates that? Yeah, imagine you go to your hotel tonight and you have some of that drink that's warm that makes in the Christmas market and you spill it all over your white sheet. Dang it. Well, I want to cut it with one cut because that's the only way to clean it. So you pick it up from the middle and you cut it off, right? And that's a plane, right? What happens when you drop it back down? What does it make? It makes a circle. What? It was the secret math the whole time. Sorry I made you feel bad initially, whoever said circle, because you were actually right. What happens is, in order to do that, here's the problem. So I skipped a lot of slides, so I need to hurry up because I'm going to run out of time. So we did that. What if it doesn't work? We did that. Kernel methods, right? So now we're doing this multiplication of all the features. The problem is, if I have two features, now I have three. If I have four features, now I have n choose two features. What if you have 1,000 features? Well, now you have this many features, n squared features. How do you do that? You can't do that. So there is this really cool secret thing. I'm only going to tell you guys. People online, stop looking. So remember, before what we did is we decided that we wanted to have the best vector W, such that this looks complicated, but it's not. Remember, this is the thing that's going to decide what side of the line it's on. So let's say you get a point that's supposed to be a negative point, a no. So if we multiply this times this vector, and this turns out to be negative, and this is also negative, then we guessed right. Right? If this is positive, and this times this is negative, we got it wrong. So the answer is going to be negative. Do you see that? And so this constraint right here is what dictates whether it's on the right side of the line or not. So we want the best vector W, you know, the one that makes the line. subject to the constraint that each point is on the right side of the line. So in order to do this, you have to do some fun calculus. It's called optimization stuff. And you have to, okay, so it turns out to be this, right? Because in order to remove the constraints, you have to add a Lagrangian. This is fun stuff, right? The extra maths you learn in Europe, subject to these constraints. But the thing about it that's interesting is that notice that the thing that you need, remember, because we need to go x, 1,000 into 1,000 squared, which we can't do, we actually don't need those. We need this thing, right? And this thing is called a kernel function. All we need to know is we need to know the dot product of every vector times itself in your data set, and we'll just store it in one matrix. That thing is called the kernel matrix. Right? So now that we have that, we don't even have to project into your infinite, into your space of 1,000 squared, because we can just store this thing and then use that in the optimization, because we only need to know what the dot product is. The cool thing about this is that when we project into the new space, when we're doing the algorithm, what we do is, when, remember how the line was moving around? Well, what's happening is it's moving around now in a new space, but we can't store that plane. We store where it makes mistakes the most. And this is what this looks like. So let's go to this thing right here, and we're going to animate. Right now it's going to think about stuff, and it's going to go into this new space, and then it's going to start to find where all the mistakes are. Right? And notice that these were random numbers that I generated. Okay? It's not like if I were to do it again, you're going to see that the numbers are all, oh, not that one. Oh, that one's, that was a, that's not a circle. Okay, well let me go on and let me show you something that's even more crazy. Remember, this is what we just did. The thing we did is we projected into three space using a polynomial kernel of degree 2, which is this thing. This is what this function is, right? When you do this thing, the RBF kernel, if you set sigma equal to 1, you are projecting into infinite dimensional space, and then you're finding a separator plane there. Yeah. I know, right? So this thing that I brought up that looked like a mistake, I am going to actually use an RBF kernel with sigma equal to 8, which is projecting to some weird space, and the computer is going to start to make a plane and figure out where the boundary is. Hold on, let me bring this other slide up real quick. It's cool, right? Yeah, and so that is what we call support vector machines. Does that make sense? So now you know how they work. It's not very mysterious, right? How much time do I have? Are you kidding? Someone will tell me in like a couple seconds, hopefully. All right, well, what if that doesn't work? Right, because remember, the first thing we tried was perceptron on our thing, and it didn't work, right, because we had that circle thing, which is where we spilled that hot wine spice thing you drink for Christmas in the Christmas market, and it didn't work. We couldn't just slice it out, so we picked it up, and that didn't work, right? Because you spilled everywhere because you're crazy. Well, what if that doesn't work? Well, we need to change the function, right? First, we changed the data, and now we're changing the function. And notice that neural networks is just the same as the perceptron. And I kind of went too fast, so I'm going to have to go back and show you this thing right here. Remember the original perceptron is like we have this W vector here, right? We get a new example and we take a dot product with each of the slots, and then it's either positive or negative. When you're doing perceptron instead, when you're doing neural networks, instead of having a flat function like that, you take the original flat function and you add hidden layers to it. Right? So effectively, it's a perceptron with more layers. Deep learning is a perceptron with lots of deep layers. And deep learning also has these other things where they can sort of short circuit back and they can sort of recur on each other. Right? But notice that the foundation of this is perceptron. It's the same thing. Right? And the difference is that, take a look, you'll see. So notice that this is like one perceptron. This is another perceptron. This is another perceptron. And now what we're doing is we're taking a function called H1, and we're taking the math of that perceptron, and we're adding it to the math of that perceptron, and the math of that one, plus a bias term. So it's like you're building a perceptron on top of a perceptron, except you have this funky function in the middle that just has to be differentiable. That's it. For those of you that like calculus and you're in Germany, you should. Because Leibniz was German. Wasn't he? Thank you for correcting my horrible, I feel bad. He turned over in his grave. This is horrible. I will never differentiate the same again, right? So here's some neural networks, right? Notice that it's the same thing as a perceptron, but just a bit different. All right, so was someone going to tell me how much time I have left? Oh, good. So I got to start moving on. So those are the linear methods, and I say ish, right? Because notice that when perceptron didn't work, we changed the space. When the changing the space didn't work, we changed the function. And this is what these things do. Okay. So now I need to stop here because I was going to do a little bit more on decision trees. No, I already did that. I was doing a little bit more on decision trees, but I feel like I'm running out of time. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to show you what this looks like in Azure Machine Learning. So the thing about programming these things is that right away we're like, I did understand that, but then you're going to go home and be like, what the heck was he talking about, right? Because this is a lot of stuff. I'm trying, right? There was a firework slide in that. So usually what I do is there's this neat thing called the Cortana Intelligence Gallery. This thing is fantastic because what it does is it says, do you have this kind of problem? Here's an example of this kind of problem solution. Do you see that? And you can, if you look right here, you can see under industries, let's just say you're, hold on, I hit the wrong one. Let's just say you're Sven, right? There you go, buddy. We were thinking of you the whole time, right? Or in your retail or manufacturing, you can pick that. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go to browse all, and I am going to pick one from here. Well, as soon as it loads up. And so notice that you have a lot of examples of the things that you can do. That's your Cortana Intelligence Gallery. While that's loading up, I'll do this now because I have to load this up. So what we're going to do is, since we're doing classification, we're going to be as morbid as possible and pick an algorithm that decides whether or not if you were on the Titanic, you would have died. Because, hey, it's dark outside and it's cold. Why not? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to this thing right here. And I'm going to pick this. I don't even know what industry this falls under. Maybe healthcare? I just made that one up. That's good. Are we recording this? Okay. So what I'm going to do is notice that you can read about it or you can just open it in the studio. Just open it, right? Because you want to see what this does. While it's opening it, I want you to see it actually because I actually have to run it. Oh, yes, of course. Of course I want to do this in the South Central U.S. So now that it's what it's doing is it's taking the example of the Titanic and it's building a machine learning whole pipeline. Notice the question is, if you were on the Titanic, what would make you die, right? What things would you die or not, right? And what it's going to do is it's going to go ahead and load the Titanic data set and then it's going to build this thing. It's almost on cue, almost. I want to talk to those people over there. And take a look at this. Notice that you start with your question. We already knew it. But then you have this thing called data. So I'm going to go ahead and hit visualize on this. Notice that it is exactly what you would think. Right? It's just data. But, well, what is the first thing? Once we have the question and we've identified our data, what's the next part? Yak shaving. Right? We need to figure out where the data is bad and what data is good and what we should use. You have these handy dandy things over here just to look at the data. You can look at the distribution of your data just by looking at these things. Right? You click on it. It gives you a little tiny one here and then a little daddy one here, right, of what the distribution is. So for example, notice that these look like they're uniform, so maybe it'll make a good feature. We don't know. How do we know which features will be good features? Science. You guess, and then you check. Science. Okay, so now the next part is once you pick the data you want to do, you need to tell it what kind of data it is. Notice that you have here this thing that's editing the metadata. It's changing these things into categorical, and it's changing these column names into categorical. which means it's A, B, C, or D, or F, right? Notice that this is the yak shaving part. This is, we all know this stuff. And then here's another one. We're going to edit this metadata because what we're going to do is, here, let me click it again. We did that one already. This one right here, notice that I don't even know what this one is doing. Looks like it's not changing anything. Where, there is one that I need to find. Oh, this one. This one right here is says, which one of the actual classes do we want to predict? Right? So we got to tell it. This is the thing we're predicting. And then the other thing that's part of the yak shaving, which is my favorite, is we are going to do this thing right here, which is called missing value scrubber. Oh, did it go black? Oops, thank you for that. I'm going to have to control one that. Sorry. So this missing value scrubber is an interesting thing because remember, if there's something missing, what do we do with it? Well, this particular module, this one. Notice that it's replacing everything with the mean. And after that, if it can't do it, it's just going to remove it. Do you see that? And so right here, you're noticing that this part right here is the identify the data step, right? This part right here is the yak shaving, right? I'll just, for yak. Because all the way at the bottom, I don't know if you see it, you see that we actually split the data because we have to cut it so that we can, remember, because that's how we test it. So that's what that's all about. So what I'm going to do now is I am going to run it. And while it's running, I'm going to talk about these things called cognitive services, which are different, right? These are actual specific tasks that machine learning does well already. And we have heaps of data at Microsoft where we've trained models to do specific things, like recognize what's in a picture, right? Or understand what you're saying, right? Or transcribing your voice into text. We've already done that. So if you have a question that's like that, then you use this, right? You can see there's all sorts of APIs with vision. I don't know. I've never seen this one. It must be new. Emotion API, face API, video API with speech. You have stuff with speech, language, and knowledge. Also search. So if your problem falls into those categories, they've already done that. But again, if you're in a healthcare situation where you want to figure out if someone died on the Titanic, which is probably all of you, right, then you would use this thing, which hopefully now is done. Almost done. Oh, see, I didn't give it enough time. It's a little small right now, but you can see that it's running. Almost done. So it's going through everything. Oh, and I didn't tell you about this part. Okay, so now once we split the data, once we've done the yak shaving, it's time to actually build the model. And these are the models that we're going to build, right? Train them. This is where we train them, and this is where we see how well they're doing. Test. Now, here's the cool part. Let me go to machine learning, and let's talk about a train model. No, not that one. We want to go to initialize model, we talked about only today classification, right? Check this out. Like, you know most of these now. Well, I didn't talk about, if I would have talked about these two, you would have seen decision. These are decision trees. We talked about this one. Did you see this? We talked about that. We talked about this. We were going to talk about that. These all sort of fall into the same thing. We talked about this one right here. And then we talked about these two as well. You already know more than half. You see, it's not as mysterious as you thought. And what you do is you literally drag these things on, right? You say, I'm going to train a model, and you're going to say, I want this model to be a two-class boosted decision tree. I'm going to take the left-hand side of the data because, remember, when we split the data, I think this one, yeah, see how it splits 70% to the left, the rest to the right? And what I've done is we've actually done it with two models, and we need to know how well they've done. So I'm going to right-click here, and I'm going to visualize this thing. And now you can see exactly how they've done. And it also has these things right here. Remember we talked about? It's not just about how good it is. It's looking like it's about 80% accurate. But notice it also has precision and recall, which are the other numbers. The thing about these algorithms is that they're returning a number between 0 and 1. And so if you want to change the precision or the recall, right, you can move what equals true and what equals false. That's what this little bar does. And notice that it changes the recall and the precision values as well. Notice you're also comparing this thing called the AUC, the area under curve. That thing right there, if it was perfectly right every time, would just be a line up and a line over, right? But notice that it kind of bends down because that's the area where it's making mistakes. And you can see the area between the two is where one algorithm is better than the other. I think the blue one is the one that works on the left and the other one's the one on the right. So what we're going to do is we're going to say, you know what? We're going to choose the one on the left, which happens to be the two-class boosted decision tree. So remember, step number one, we identify data. Step number two, we clean it up. We saw that in the middle. Step number three, we pick the model. Once we pick the model, what do? We predict. Well, how do we do that? Let me show you this crazy thing right here. So I picked that. What I'm going to do is I'm going to make a predictive web service, and I've clicked on train model. So I'm going to click that. Watch this craziness. Whoa. That's crazy, right? Was that hard? Yes. Now notice at the top, we have this thing called a training experiment and this thing called a predictive experiment. They're different things, right? And what do we do once it's done? Well, we got to run it to make sure that it works. Notice that you have these weird blue things happening at the top. That's where the data comes in. And then at the bottom is where the data comes out. So how do we access this magical algorithm that we've all built with such love and care? Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to deploy this web service using Classic. I tried doing the other one because I haven't done this demo in a while, and it everything exploded, which is good because I got a new machine. No, I'm just kidding. That's not true. So now we have this API thing where you can actually pass a value in, have it filled out, or pass a set of things in and have it filled out. Or because, like we said, what did we say about Excel? You can download an Excel, fill in a whole bunch of them, and the service will return all the answers in them. But, you know, we all like code. Like, there's got to be, like, I wish, hold on. So this is the actual, I wish they would help us out. Like, here's the API, but I wish they would help us out with some code. Oh, look at that. Like, literally the exact code you would need to write in C#. But we like Python, right? Because it works in Visual Studio Code. So there's Python and there's also R. Okay. We okay so far? How much time? 5 minutes. See, look at that. I couldn't do that. So that's pretty amazing, right? We actually went through, we learned some models, we learned how to do it also in Azure ML. So I kind of skipped this one because I knew I was going to run out of time, but this is a super simple one as well. It's how the Connect works, how recognize, it's really good too. But we looked at support vector machines and neural networks. We also did that. Okay. So now it's time for your questions. What questions do you have so far? Like I said, I don't mind if you're going to be contemplative about it. It's okay. And let me check if I have any questions online. I think I closed it. No, I didn't. It's right here. Nope, no questions. Any questions? You have like 4 minutes, right? Because I have to end exactly at the right time. So there has got to be, yes?
How do you ensure that the data is correct or that the data is correct for the right data for the problem?
So the question is, how do I verify that the data is the right data for the problem? It's a one-word answer. Science. Next question. But in all reality, you have to try stuff. You have to try it out, right? And that's the beauty of this thing. That's why when people use machine learning and they figure out the exact parameterization of the parameters and the features that they should use and how they, because you can also make new features out of the old features too. Notice that that's what support vector machines does. But you can actually make some yourself. For example, if you have velocity of a car, the distance traveled, right, and the time they traveled, those three, they kind of overlap informationally, right? There's a sense that if you have those two, you can make the other one. it's not a machine learning problem anymore, right? It's literally just division if you want to predict how fast someone was going. So you got to have a sense for these things. And the best thing to do is don't cheat, right? You don't want to add features that have the answer in them, right? Because you're cheating. And then you get into this problem called overfitting, right? Which is you're going to make your model work really good with your data that you have. And then when it goes out in the real world, it does stupid things. Yes. Yes, and in fact, the question is, can I go back and, because I might have more data that will make the algorithm better, can I go back and feed it more data and do it again? Yes, in fact, there is this whole data factory, huge, super awesome, and if you go to Cortana Intelligence Gallery, you'll see there's a way to actually get ingest data via the cold path called a Lambda architecture, where you're getting stuff in the hot path, right, and doing prediction on the stuff as it's coming in, right? And then what you can do is you can store that data in the cold path and have the machine learning algorithms run all the time or run every week, and then they produce this new thing. And then as the hot data is coming in, it can do prediction. And so you can set up this entire data architecture of how you want to do things. And in the IoT space, there is nothing better than what we're doing right now for, I don't even know what it's called, but I saw it one time. And I asked people about it, and they gave me a really good demo, and I have a video somewhere that I don't remember much about. But the answer is yes. Thank you. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
Is the neural network behind it accessible directly? So can I have a view of the weights and the number of layers?
So the interesting thing is that there is a really, I don't know what the language is called, but with neural networks, there is a way to represent the actual layout or structure of the neural networks. Most people don't know this, but the neural networks that are implemented in Azure ML subscribe to that language. So you can fully describe your particular neural network and put it in via that language. I'll have to look it up and put it, you know, in the links below. But there is a way to define the structure, but there isn't a way to pull the weights down, as far as I can tell. That's a good question. Any other questions? Yes?
How much does it cost?
Oh, that's a really good question. So the only thing, and I gotta find, there was a place where, here's the new web service experience, and I think it's gotta be, let's see, base. There is a way to look at it. It's actually very cheap. It's like per 1,000 calls, it's like 10 cents or something crazy like that. I don't know what it is exactly, but there is, you have to pay per number of calls. It's like an API call, you know, you pay, and then you have to pay for the VM while it's training.
And does it depend on the volume of data that has to be processed?
Well, I mean, the larger the amount of data that's being processed, the more training time has to happen, and you pay for that fractional time. The answer is yes, whether you use Azure ML or not, right? Because you could either buy a huge computer with a Tesla in it, which is a fancy GPU. I've been trying to get one, but my boss says it's too expensive, right? And so, I mean, you can do that, but it's going to take more time. But the reality of the matter is we can no longer remain on the sidelines when it comes to automatic classification of things that are important to our business. Because you can ride horses all you want in an F1 race, but you're going to lose, right? Any other questions? Yes?
So how do you integrate this in application lifecycle management?
That's a really good question. Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess it depends on how your application is laid out. This should be treated as any API, external API that you use in your application. So however you treat your APIs externally, the question was, how do I treat this in sort of my process pipeline and development, just treat it as any other API. Did that answer your question? Yes.
No.
Oh, please, yes.
How can you check it in? I mean, what do you do? Concerning versioning, rollout?
That's a really good question. The question is, what can we do concerning versioning? The thing that happened really fast that you didn't see is when I did this machine, oh, where did it go? When I did this particular experiment, notice that there was two. There was one that had to do the training, and there was another one that had to do the actual predicting. What you can do is for each training step, you can create a new trained model, and then that trained model can reside there in Azure. But do you check it in? I don't know of a way to do that. I should ask them about that. That's a good question. Last question.
Can I extend with my language error, for example,
So the question is, can I use R? The answer is yes. In fact, the cool thing about this is there... Oh, whoops, I went to the wrong thing. Let me go to... Oh, shoot. Let me go to experiments here. Let me load this up. The answer is yes. When you go here, notice that there is this thing called R language models. You literally just execute R, and you just put it in there. You can do whatever you want. So that's the last question. I'm going to sort of stop there. If you have any other questions, feel free to come get me at the Channel 9 booth. I'm happy to do that. Thanks so much for your time. You've been very kind. Thank you.